On Monday, November 10th, is the 39th anniversary of the sinking of the Edmund Fitzgerald. And it happens also to be the only time each year that the Split Rock Lighthouse beacon is actually lit and visitors can climb the tower. So Lee Radzak, the site manager, historic site manager of the Split Rock Lighthouse, and this year's Lake Superior Magazine Achievement Award winner for his work with the lighthouse, is going to join us and tell us about the celebration down there, or the anniversary lighting. And Lee Radzak, thank you for being so patient with us here as we are in our pledge drive, as you know. So being able to talk to people like you is made possible by our member donations. So Lee Radzak, if you're still with me out there, welcome to the Roadhouse.
I sure am, Bob, and of course you got to take care of business, but that's fine.
Yeah, well, this is Dick Swanson talking to you. Bob was the guy who got you on the phone, so...
Oh, okay, Dick.
That's okay.
How you doing?
Just fine, thank you. And I think to start out with our discussion here, why don't you just give us a description of this event at the Split Rock State Park on November 10th?
Well, sure. Every November 10th now for, well, if my math is right, 29 years, we started on the 10th anniversary of the sinking of the Fitzgerald. So since 1985, we've been lighting the beacon on November 10th. And enough interest was shown first by locals who saw it lit. And later on, we started to kind of make a little event of it. And finally, it kind of transformed into an annual event where we do a beacon lighting, and we also do a ceremony where we read off the names of the 29 crew members who perished with the Fitzgerald and ring a ship's bell for every one of them. And then we also ring a 30th toll to remember all the other shipwreck victims of Lake Superior. And when you think that there were probably 350 shipwrecks on Lake Superior over the last 300 or 400 years, it adds up to quite a few.
Yeah, I guess it does. Now, for folks who might want to actually attend that, how do you accommodate them? I mean, is everybody huddled around the light up above there, or when you?
Well, yeah, you know, it's part of, I think, the attraction of this event. And one thing we've noticed is that a lot of people. We see a lot of familiar faces that come back to this event every year. And I think part of the attraction is to be right on the shore of Lake Superior in November. Some years we get storms that are similar to the storm that took the Fitzgerald, and people kind of relish that. We do the event right at the base of the lighthouse, which is, for those who have been at Split Rock, know that it's right up 130 feet above the water, right next to the shoreline. And... it's once we finished the ceremony at about, we started at 4:30, and it lasts only about 10 minutes or so, the tolling of the bell. Then we turn on the beacon. Of course, by about 4:45, it's almost totally dark. And then we open up the tower again. We have it open before the ceremony, and then we open it up again after it. And all the visitors can walk up into the lighthouse and get right up into the lens room and see that big Fresnel lens shining out over the lake.
Wow. And do they have to wear sunglasses or any protective eyewear?
Well, yeah, if you were up on level with it, if you were up on the lantern deck on the upper level right in line with it, that beacon can be seen 22 miles away, so it is a bright light. But
wow.
When you're standing down beneath it looking up at it, it's pretty impressive to see that rotating on its original clockwork mechanism, and to actually see how it works and what the keepers had to do to keep that thing going during the shipping season for 50
years. Yeah, I definitely want to get back to those kind of little facts about the light itself, how long it's been there and how it works in the past and so on. But maybe, and I think everyone is somewhat familiar with the sinking of the Edmund Fitzgerald, but that was 1975 when that occurred. What was going on at the Split Rock Lighthouse at that time during that storm? Was the light lit?
Well, in 1975, really nothing much was going on at Split Rock. It was taken out of service, decommissioned in 1969, and then it was deeded over to the state of Minnesota because of all the interest, tourism interest in the light station that actually began as soon as Highway 61 was opened in 1924. Then it became a small state park in the early 1970s, and by 1975, there still wasn't a whole lot that had been done for restoration and bringing the light station back to the way it was in the 1920s. But the Minnesota Historical Society took it over as a state historic site in 1976. So in 1975, the beacon was dark. There was nothing going on there. The Fitzgerald and the Arthur M. Anderson sailed by Split Rock Lighthouse on November 9th of 1975, heading out onto the lake, and they wouldn't have seen the beacon. It would have been dark. And, of course, that's because of bad radar and ship-to-shore radio and everything by the 70s, so they didn't need the beacon.
So tell us a little bit about what happened to the Fitzgerald and the Anderson.
Well, when they left Superior, Duluth Superior, on November 9th, and they did go out into, it was fairly stormy weather, but nothing that they was unusual to them or that they didn't think they could handle. But it was enough of a storm coming out of the north and northwest that they hugged or stayed pretty close to the Minnesota shoreline, the North Shore, all the way up past Isle Royale and into Canadian water, just to stay kind of in the land shadow so the waves weren't so big. And when they got up that far, of course, they had to turn and head southeast all the way down the lake. And by then they had these 20 to 30-foot rollers and big waves coming at their stern. And still, the Arthur M. Anderson, which was falling about 10 miles behind the Fitzgerald, didn't think it was that bad, but he was starting to get messages from Captain Ernest McSorley on the Fitzgerald that there were some problems, that they had a list, that they were taking on water, but their pumps were barely keeping up with it. And they went all the way down the lake to within 17 miles of Whitefish Point, which is close to the east end of the lake. And at that point, there was a snow squall that obscured visibility from the Anderson to the Fitzgerald. And when it cleared again, there was no more Fitzgerald visible on the horizon and no radio contact. So In just that short a time of maybe 10 minutes, it disappeared.
Hmm. And the Anderson was a similar-sized boat, ship?
Yes, it was. It was similar, not quite as big as the Fitzgerald. I don't think the Fitzgerald was one of the largest of the time. In 1975, it was 729 feet long. So it was a big ship, and it shouldn't have been bothered normally by that storm. It would have been rough sailing. But
and what do they attribute it to now after all these years?
Well, there's a lot of conjecture and a lot of theories. Basically, the official Coast Guard reasoning is that there was loss of freeboard that was sinking lower and lower in the water. Whether that was from open hatch covers or they may have scraped the shoal as they went past Caribou Shoals, whether there was trouble with the keelson and the bottom of the ship to begin with, because it had repairs. No one knows for sure if it was a combination of these factors, but that's part of the mystery of it.
They have discovered and found the wreck, however, have they not?
The wreck was discovered shortly thereafter. In fact, the next day they went back and they were out searching for it, and still in the fall, late winter of 75, they had located where it was on the bottom, but they had to come back in 1976 and really identify it and realize that that's what they had and where they had it. And, and it's still on the bottom of the lake today. None of the crew members have been recovered. It's an officially a grave site now, and it's just over the U.S.-Canadian border in Canadian waters.
And it's 500 feet deep, isn't it, something like that?
Yeah, 530 feet.
530. I want to remind our listeners that we are speaking with Lee Radzik, the historic site manager from the Split Rock Lighthouse State Park. Yeah, what I wanted to know was, Where were you when the Edmund Fitzgerald went down? Do you remember?
Yes, I remember. I was actually in college at St. Cloud State in St. Cloud, Minnesota. So I wasn't even up on the shore or in the area, but it was big news all over the Midwest for sure and all over the country.
If my notes are correct, you've been the historic site manager for Split Rock since 1982.
That's correct.
You came there, you know, within 7 years after the Edmund Fitzgerald. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what your job is as historic site manager?
Sure. I actually work for the Minnesota Historical Society. What I do is I manage the 25-acre historic site of Split Rock Lighthouse, which actually entails all of Split Rock Light Station. There's 11 historic buildings, and then the grounds around it. And then those grounds, the historic site is surrounded by 2,200 acres of state park, which DNR operates. But my business is just focused on the historic site. So,
yeah, I guess I didn't realize that you were essentially somewhat separate from the park. I mean, you're clearly within the park, I guess, but you have a special designation.
Yes, it's a Minnesota State Historic Site. It's also a National Historic Landmark, which means that the light station has significance from a historic perspective nationally. And it's a little different operation. We focus more on the historic site, of course, on cultural resource more than, I'd say, DNR focuses more on the natural resource and the camping and everything else. And what's great is that, of course, the historic site is protected and has a big buffer area around it to keep those historic areas historic.
How did that historic site get the name Split Rock?
It got the name it's a good question that there isn't really a good answer for. It was called the Split Rock Region. The Split Rock River was known as the Split Rock River way back on some of the early surveys in the 1800s. And so the whole area was kind of called the Split Rock Region around the Split Rock River. And the lighthouse was built on what was actually called Stony Point before the lighthouse was built there. And it's about 2 miles from the Split Rock River. But in 1909, when they wanted to build the lighthouse, the Lake Carriers Association, the U.S. government, said, build a lighthouse in the vicinity of Split Rock, Minnesota, on the North Shore. So I think that's what came up with the name.
And they chose a pretty dramatic site. Now, what about you said 1909 was when the lighthouse was built?
Yes, construction. It took a whole year of 1909 to build all 11 buildings, and it was built as a direct result of the 1905 storm that was called, at that time it was called the Storm of the Century or the Matafa Blow. Some listeners might know that because of the Matafa was a big ore carrier that tried to make it through the Duluth Ship Canal in that 1905 storm and ended up sinking just 700 feet off of where Canal Park is, and 9 men died on that boat in 1905. And as a result of that, they wanted a lighthouse somewhere on the North Shore to keep the ships away from the North Shore because it wasn't.
I remember from an interview I did last year that 1913 was a very historic storm on Lake Superior, too. So the Split Rock Lighthouse was functioning in that storm. Did it do its job?
Yeah, that 1913 storm, actually, it wasn't too bad on the west end of Lake Superior. It hit Lake Huron a lot harder, and there were a number of shipwrecks on Lake Huron and a couple on Lake Superior, but more on the eastern end. But at the time in 1913, you know, we got the original lightkeeper's logs, and they don't even mention the storm
at
that time in 1913.
There were many boats that went to the bottom on that one, as I recall.
Yes, that was a bad storm.
Okay, I don't want to tell us about the lens that people will see if they come there and how that works and who is Fresnel?
Well, yeah, the lens that's in place there is not the biggest of lighthouse lenses, but it is one of the largest on the Great Lakes. It's called a third-order bivalve Fresnel lens. And Fresnel comes from, there was a Frenchman in the 1820s that invented the system, Augustin Fresnel was his name, and of using prisms and directing multiple prisms and having a light source in the center and then having those prisms collect all that light and send it out in one beam. By the 1830s and 40s, European lighthouses were using those kind of lenses, but in the United States, they didn't start using them until the 1860s or so.
And what does it do? It takes a relatively small light and just projects it, sort of, or magnifies it?
Yeah, it actually multiplies it because there's a light source, and in our case now when you're in the lighthouse, there's a 1,000-watt light bulb. The light source, and that's similar in brightness to the kerosene lamp that would have been put in 1910.
Really? They would have had a 1,000-watt kerosene lamp?
Yes, it would have been comparable in brightness to a 1,000-watt light bulb. And then there's 242 prisms in the lens, and of course that light sprays out from that 1,000-watt light bulb and hits all of those prisms, and those prisms reflect and refract that light and point it all out into a beam out on the lake. So that's why that, and it's about 7 feet, or it is exactly 7 feet across the width of the lens. So it looks like a, really from out on the lake, like you have a 7 foot high and wide light source coming at you from the
shore. And you say that that lighthouse is decommissioned. Does that mean there's no light, not even a remote, one that's operated remotely or mechanically now? I'm not sure what
correct,
I'm saying
yes.
here, but without having right, to be tended, is there a light?
I know what you mean. Yeah, there is no light at all. A lot of the decommissioned lights, or the ones that the Fresnel lenses have been taken out of, but if there's still an active lighthouse, they have now the state of the art is LED lights. They came together a bunch of LED lights, and they're such low wattage use that they don't require a lot of maintenance. So there are still lighthouses that are being used. Very few Fresnel lenses are still in use. The one was taken out of Grand Marais a couple of years ago, Grand Marais Lighthouse, right?
And we have that in our Historic Society building,
yeah, and that's,
museum.
That's
here.
Really neat that's there, and that Carrie McHugh's got that at the Historical Society there.
Well, we have a Storm Fest weekend up here this weekend, so folks, that I'm sure that museum is going to be open there. Folks can go in and see what that Fresnel lens is all about and look at the waves crashing. Before we leave you, Lee, I want to ask you to tell us about your achievement award from Lake Superior Magazine.
Oh, yeah, that was a real honor. It came as kind of a surprise to me. They didn't say anything about it in advance, and the editor called me up this fall and said, well, we better let you know the magazine's coming out next week and you're getting an achievement award. And I guess it's basically that I've been at Split Rock for 32 years and worked in the community on some other projects and I've been involved in the Scenic Byway Council for the North Shore Drive and Gitche-Gami Trail Association, some other things, and just really enjoy being part of the community, and I'm just fortunate I have the kind of job that allows me to be involved with a lot of projects in the area and not just the lighthouse.
We want to congratulate you and thank you for all your work. And I will just ask you if you have anything else you'd like to add as the last bit about the November 10th celebration.
Sure. Yeah, well, thank you, Dick. The celebration, the ceremony will be going on. We're going to open up the visitor center at Split Rock and the lighthouse at 11 a.m. on Monday, and it'll be open until 6 p.m. We have the ceremony. It's called the Last Muster, the Watch of the Edmund Fitzgerald, the bell ringing ceremony. It's at 4:30, right at the base of the lighthouse. But we do have, we're going to be doing guided tours, kind of short introductory 20-minute tours during the day, talking about storms and shipwrecks and Lake Superior, a little bit different things than we talk about normally in the summer with visitors when they come, and focusing on the storms and what it's like in November on Lake Superior. And then the beacon will stay on, even though the lighthouse will close at 6 o'clock. We'll keep the beacon on until 7 p.m. So if anybody's driving by, heading up to Grand Marais or coming down the shore, a real good place to see it when you go by is from, it's called Chapin's Curves, just a couple of miles, about a mile to the east, northeast of Split Rock, between Beaver Bay and Split Rock.
Right, and maybe there will be folks who have attended the Stormfest in Grand Marais on their way home, and they can stop and see it. Well, Lee Radzik, thank you very much. It's been a very interesting conversation. There's lots more I would have loved to talk to you about, but congratulations on your award, and good luck with the celebration. Thanks for being on the Roadhouse.